Everybody, and welcome to the Digitally Uploaded podcast. It's my birthday today, so I get to control everything and everybody has to do what I say. Not really. You got to be nice at least. So with us this week, we have Ginny. Hello, Ginny.
Hey, how's it going?
All good. And also with us, we have Tyler, who is now full-time gamefully employed with PlayStation Lifestyle. Congratulations, Tyler, on that, and good to have you on.
Yeah, thank you so much. Since it is your birthday, it's the one day where your bad opinions on Doom can just be tolerated and nobody will yell at you about it.
Ooh.
Yeah, I'm still going to get yelled at about it. It's just inevitable. It's going to happen. And welcome back. That was a Lucas song, actually, not a Hatsune Miku one, as usual, but as it is my birthday, all the music's going to be Miku, let's face it. Let's kick the podcast off this week. I figured we could talk all about JRPGs, since we're all JRPG fans here from way back when. The various things we like about them, we'll talk about some classic JRPGs, and you know, notable examples of the genre and games that we kind of recommend that everybody plays because, yeah, we're all fans of JRPGs here, and we assume that anybody listening to the podcast at this stage probably is as well. So, Tyler, since you're the guest coming in, let's kick off by, you know, what are some of the first JRPGs you played and what kind of got you into the genre in the first place?
So I actually started, like, later than when I first started gaming, because I kind of grew up playing platformers and more action-oriented games, and I don't think I actually like played an RPG until I got a Game Boy, and then I started playing Pokemon. So it was a few years into my gaming that I got into RPGs. But after that, I remember getting Final Fantasy games for the PS1. I really delve into that. Got the whole way to the third disc of Final Fantasy VIII, and I don't think I ever finished that, but everybody has those regrets. But I just really got into it from there, and then from the Game Boy Advance and DS and onward from that, it quickly became my favorite genre, because I found out that nothing really felt as satisfying as like a really good RPG for myself. Just having that long play time, having a cast of characters that you love. Like, when they come together, like, I feel like nothing in gaming can really top it as a genre.
Yeah, it's an interesting one that you kind of started with Pokemon, because obviously of all the JRPG franchises out there, that was the one that's probably the least JRPG in the sense that it doesn't really, you know, hold a sustained narrative. The characters aren't really there. I mean, obviously the Pokemon have character, but it's a very different one to, I guess, what you would have experienced after that.
Yeah, it was a good taste to get me into it. Like, you know, it's pretty light on the RPG side, but it was enough to get me in and get me more interested in the genre as a whole.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, the Pokemon themselves are super cute. It'd be good to, just speaking about Pokemon briefly, it'd be good to have Pokemon on the Switch, I think. I think that's something that the console really needs now. And it'd be great to see a Pokemon, you know, in 3D, finally, properly 3D, I mean, and stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that series is as well as a kid. But I find that, you know, even though I still love the Pokemon games, I'm hooked on one that I've played it beyond the end of the game, got into the end game and stuff. I haven't really got into that for Pokemon for quite a while, whereas I was hugely into it with Blue and Gold and whatever the first one on the GBA was, I can't remember which. But yeah, do you still play Pokemon Tile?
I'm more like you. After, I think the last one I played really hardcore was probably Diamond and Pearl. But after that, I don't know. Like, I'll buy the game still. I play through the story, but I can't. I'm not putting in more than like the 40 hours to see the credits roll. Like, the post game isn't really all that compelling to me. And while it's always cool to collect new Pokemon, I have no desire to try to get them all. It's too much of an undertaking for me.
Yeah, that's right. Once you've got a couple of ducks, Farfetch'd, or about it for me, then I'm pretty.
Yeah, once you have a Slowbro. Like, do you need anything else?
There are so many cool new Pokemon, though. Like, I mean, I kind of stopped playing after Pokemon, the original Sapphire. That was like the last one that I got really, really super into playing until the end game and like beyond. But then when Sun and Moon came out, I was like, well, I'll bite the bullet, you know, I'll try this game. And I've actually really, really gotten into Pokemon Sun the same way I had with the old Sapphire games. I think like the whole change of scenery was really what the series needed to make it more refreshing. And also, like, I think centering the Pokemon again has sort of made me really want to play more. Like, they seem to, the personalities pop a lot more in the new games. And so I just like it's like hanging out with a friend now. And so I play the end game of Sun and Moon just to collect more friends, I guess. But I know that sounds like really sad to all my listeners. Don't worry, I'm fine. Like, I've got real life friends too. But no, it is. Like, I think Pokemon the Switch would be really great if they kind of made it like Pokemon Colosseum. Do you guys remember that one?
Oh, that was great.
That was like the Pokemon RPG, I guess, the JRPG of the series. But I think if they had a Pokemon release on the Switch that was like Pokemon Colosseum or Pokemon XD Gale of Darkness, like, I would just like throw down like however much my Nintendo asked of me. If they were like, give me all, you know, all the IP rights to all your work in the future, I'd be like, yes, just give me this RPG, please. So,
yeah.
Yeah. In terms of the other one that you mentioned there, Tyler, was of the classic JRPGs, that you, Final Fantasy VIII. What was it about the third disc that stopped you? Because I agree, like, I thought my first Final Fantasy that I owned, as far as I can remember, and yeah, like you, I got to the third disc and just loses its steam pretty rapidly after that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But, like, I was really into it, and then, I don't know, I just remember getting trapped in some mansion or something, and I had no clue what was going on. I just got frustrated at a certain point, but I don't know. I think as a kid, I didn't have the space. I didn't have many memory cards, and so the space was real valuable. So I think I kept saving over my Final Fantasy VIII. I think it's a big save, so I think I had to keep deleting it. So I must have played through the beginning of that game about like 500,000 times.
Oh my god!
I don't know. I barely beat any games as a kid. I was really bad at like finishing games. But my God, do I remember that dancing scene? Because I must have saw Squall and the girl dance about 500,000 times. Oh my God, I was just amazed by the graphics and those cutscenes too. Like, it just blew me away. I actually saw the Final Fantasy movie in theaters, and I was the only person in the theater. Nobody else was there.
Oh,
no one else came? Seriously?
Yeah, it was kind of embarrassing, but it was also kind of awesome. There was nobody else.
Yeah, I didn't think The Spirits Within was that bad, actually, to be honest. That's controversial, I know. I'm going to get a lot of hate mail for saying that. But I didn't think it was so bad.
Better than Doom, at the very least.
Yeah.
Well, certainly better than the movie, let's put it that way. I mean, the Doom movie.
Oh my God, the Doom movie. I totally forgot about that.
Oh, no. You gotta have like the one person in the world that likes a Doom movie, like emailing you directly.
Yeah, I'm getting copied now.
I'll tell you about the brilliance of how they turned it into a first-person movie for that one segment.
Yeah.
Yes, I remember that. It was.
You can't tell me that's not art, Matt.
Well, it's art. It's art in a sense. But yeah. There's good art, and then there's art that you really don't want to ever experience.
It's art like painting with vegetables when you're like in preschool. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I'm going to get hate mail. God damn it.
Yeah. So, I mean, Ginny, in terms of the Final Fantasy series, what are your favorites?
Seven.
Over the years.
Has been one of my favorites. Seven, yeah. I know it's not like, I don't know if many people think that 7 is better than 8. I think that 7 is better than 8. I didn't even make it to third disc on 8, so you guys are probably, I mean, it's just, I don't know, like, obviously I played it when I was super young, and I just thought, like, the story in, at the age that I played it, so it, obviously I didn't play it when it first came out, because I was, like, a literal infant when that happened, but, I played it later on. I think I was probably about like maybe like 12 years old, 12, 13 years old. And it was like that sort of like really, really weird, angsty story that like someone at my age, you know, listening to My Chemical Romance really enjoyed. So I think I have like very nostalgic memories sort of like clouded by my age that made me really enjoy 7 that much. I mean, like, the whole, like, Sephiroth thing, and then, like, just, you know, as a child, I was, like, really into, like, Sasuke and Sephiroth. So, I mean, you know, that was it for me. That was enough. And I didn't really play 8 until much later, and I think it was sort of after the age whereby, as you mentioned, as a child, like, well, for me anyway, as a child, I had so much more patience. Like, I would try and pretty much clock everything that I played because I was probably insane, you know, but I think as I got older and I didn't try 8 until probably like 6 years ago, I just didn't have that same patience to sit there and like go through it and try and literally finish everything. Like, I would get lost so often playing 8 that I just thought it wasn't worth it for me. But I mean, I think the real distinct difference for me, I mean, I've played 4. 4's cool, real nice, also one of my favorites. And I think that the more FF I've played, especially the more recent ones, like 15, I don't know if I quite... Obviously, 15 is beautiful and the graphics are amazing and everything gets better every single year that it's been released, but I don't think that 15 is a compelling story. Like, if someone was like... If someone, like, locked me in a room and they had, like, a gun to my head and they were like, you can only play one game you have to clock it. You have to enjoy it. You know, we're going to be monitoring your heart rate or something to see if you enjoy it. It would not be 15, you know, probably 7 or 4. And it's just not because I don't think that the stories are good, but I think over time, Final Fantasy has lost that same narrative drive, momentum. Does that make sense? Like, I feel like the way that they spin a story now in a lot of modern JRPGs is not as engaging. Everything looks good.
Yeah, I mean,
and they kind of coast by and everything looking good and relying on you kind of, I guess, visualizing stuff, which is not always the best way to tell a story.
I don't know. I mean, for me, I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of Final Fantasy VII, and that's going to get me a lot more hate mail. but I could certainly appreciate it. I mean, Final Fantasy VII has a great story, definitely a really strong narrative. You know, amazing environmental themes, and it's got a lot of depth to it. And thinking and sitting down thinking about the game after you play it, and it kind of really resonates with you. For me, what I found difficult with Final Fantasy VII is mostly the aesthetics I find to be really unattractive. And I know that was because the game's obviously primitive, but then you move to Final Fantasy VIII and the jump and the fidelity of the graphics and the presentation of the game is just that much more. So I actually enjoyed Final Fantasy VIII as a complete package a little bit more. Moving forward to Final Fantasy XV, I do agree that they've focused so heavily on the presentation of the game, and they kind of now start is struggling, I guess, to pull together a narrative that people think is as classic as those kind of earlier games. That being said, I think Final Fantasy has this odd thing where people the games more and more as they get older. Not as the people get older, as the games get older. It kind of happened with Final Fantasy X. I remember when Final Fantasy X first came out, there was all kinds of, you know, people complaining about it. Like, it was, you know, the Final Fantasy series is ruined. You know, this is a terrible game. It's not up to the quality of 7 and 8 and whatever. Fast forward to when they did the remakes on PlayStation 3 and 4 and whatever, and all of a sudden it's a classic. And the same thing happened with Final Fantasy.
We're even seeing with 13 now, where people are starting to come around on 13's quality, like just general perception.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Final Fantasy XII had the same thing happen. I remember that so many people on the forums, because Twitter didn't exist back then, but certainly forums did, and people were melting down about how bad Final Fantasy XII was on the forums. The remake was, you know, incredibly well received when it came out a month ago. And Final Fantasy XIII, like Tyler said, I'm pretty sure, you know, Square Enix gives it another 5 or 6 years and then releases the trilogy pack. That's going to be very well received, and I suspect Final Fantasy XV might be the same, might not, you know, might break the cycle, but yeah, it just seems to be, seeing Square Enix releases a Final Fantasy game, people hate it because it's not the Final Fantasy they wanted, and then, you know, fast forward 10 years and they realize that it's actually not so bad.
I think 12 in particular really suffered from that, just because it wasn't the typical turn-based affair. You know, it was more active in the battle, and that was really jarring. I remember when I first played 12, I was like, this isn't the Final Fantasy I know. What is this? But, you know, I kept playing with it. And, I you know, once you come in to settle with the differences and really come in with an open mind, like, 12 is a really great game.
And welcome back again. Okay, so the second section of the podcast, we thought we'd talk about, the JRPG in the mainstream. The genre never went away, as some people used to claim, towards the middle of the PlayStation 3's life cycle. In particular, there was that perception that the JRPG was a fading force, and there weren't any games being produced for anybody aside from the ultra-hardcore fans of the genre. I think that's pretty. It's pretty safe to say that it's well and truly a mainstream genre again. This year alone brought us Nier Automata and Persona 5, and both of those games were well and truly beyond appealing to the most hardcore fans. It's good to see that there's a lot more interest in the mainstream again in this JRPG genre. Tyler, if you look at the genre, what do you think it is that's kind of driving that resurgence?
I think
interest in the JRPG.
I think we're seeing some innovation, which has really helped the games, and they're looking more modern too. Because if you look at a game like Final Fantasy 15, and you look at Persona 5, these are very stylish, graphically impressive games. And for a while there, a lot of the JRPGs that were being made, aside from your Final Fantasies, of course, like a lot of the games kind of looked like a generation behind. Like if you look at a Neptunia game, for example, like it or not, those games are not exactly technical marvels from a graphical side. So we're seeing more polish in general on the PlayStation 4 and Vita. And I feel like we're also seeing the gameplay improve more, because like Persona 5, every single ounce of that game is very polished. The action, it feels good. That like they basically put in a stealth game, bunch of stealth mechanics into their RPG, and you use that to, you're sneaking through the different palaces and all that. And it works out really well. So we're seeing developers kind of, put new spins on established norms. And I feel like people are going, oh yeah, this is why I like the genre, and here's these new things that really bring me back into it. So I feel like that combination of sticking to what works while also putting a new fresh coat of either functions or a fresh veneer of graphics that are really like bringing people back into it.
Do you think perhaps also the fact that it's so easy to now share content as you're playing the game is helping? I get the impression the JRPG genre in particular that as I'm playing, there's stuff that I'll see, and I'll use Yakuza Zero as an example because I think that's the perfect example. Quirkiness and so much fun that was kind of pulled through that game, and I think people sharing screenshots and little clips of what they're playing and what they're seeing and what they're experiencing encourages other people to go, well, hang on, this is weird and maybe I want to check it out. So I think the ability to share screenshots, the ease of that PlayStation 4 share button is really helping the genre. I think Nier Automata also kind of enjoyed that.
Exactly. That is a phenomenal point. And I actually just read an article about how Yakuza's kind of resurgence is all happening thanks to that damn tweet about the chicken, about the turkey. Like if it wasn't for that, I don't know if Yakuza Zero would have seen like the much more success. Like it was very organic, where people kept sharing screens from that game and people kept getting into it. And I do feel like the share button helps out so much, which was why I was so disappointing when Atlas limited it in Persona 5, although a lot of that still went viral. Just you can flip out your phone real easy. But we are getting more shareable moments, and if like the localizations keep being top notch and humor filled, it's not crazy to see a JRPG kind of dominate your Twitter feed for days at a time. And even if you're not initially interested in it, you see enough like interesting, funny pieces of dialogue, you're like, huh, maybe I should check this out and give it a chance. So I feel like we're getting more people back into the genre due to that, and they're realizing, oh, you know what, these characters are likable, I like this art style. So the share button does have a lot of impact that way.
You look at Yakuza, you look at the kind of the official screenshots that Sega puts out about them, about that game, and it all looks quite, it doesn't look serious, of course, but it looks like, like it's a Yakuza story, because yeah, that's what Sega wants to put forward. They don't show the really weird stuff or the really funny stuff because, you know, amongst other things, they want players to experience it for themselves. So a certain side of the game that they think will appeal to people. And I think the real strength of Yakuza is not in the main storyline. And it's in those kind of odd moments, like you see the guy in the nappy running around gyrations and stuff. And that's the quirk. That's the charm of Yakuza. And that kind of stuff you can't put out in official screenshots because everyone would be like, what the hell is this game? But yeah, when you see it in your Twitter feed, that's a different thing entirely. And I think I agree. It was really irritating that Atlus locked it off for Persona 5. I understand why they did, because it's such a narrative-focused game that they didn't want spoilers upsetting people. But there was just so many times that I was actually reaching for that bloody share button when I was playing that game and wasn't able to share things, and it was distressing.
Oh,
I couldn't share Anne as much as I wanted to share Anne with the world.
Well, oh, you God. Did still share lots of pics of it as you were playing through it, so I think we all got the experience we need.
I mean, I don't want to, like, bring up a waifu debate on your birthday, but I don't get how you can choose Anne over Makoto. Like, what is wrong with you?
Seriously? No, what do you mean? What is wrong with you?
What?
There, see, oh, no. See, Tyler, I found
everybody's against me. And...
I'm sorry, I know we just met, but boy, I mean... happening, come on. Oh Lord. Okay, now sorry, I'm gonna tone down the Anne rhetoric on this holy day of all days. I'm gonna take a big chill pill, but seriously, Anne is like, you can't see me, obviously no one can see me right now, but guys, I'm doing like the okay symbol with my hand, like the chef kiss symbol is what I'm doing right now with my hand.
Well, at least you're not Futaba fans, like that's all I'll say.
Yeah,
she's not cool at all.
I'm pretty sure Futaba is a member of Gamergate.
She probably has a bunch of, I think she would have a bunch of people that like her who are like that. So look forward to more hate mail, everyone, in this podcast right now. Oh, Lord.
Digression from the JRPG thing, but how cool was it that they announced two rhythm games, Persona rhythm games?
I know.
P5 and so... P3. P3 and P5, that's just great.
It's going to be the best. See,
I really like Dancing All Night. Like, even the story, I really enjoyed. I thought it showed, like, a lot of progression for, like, the Persona 4 cast, and you could see them kind of growing up a bit. And I really enjoyed that game, so I'm excited to see what they do with more Persona dancing games.
Yeah,
absolutely. It was one of those rare rhythm games where I felt the story was kind of, if not anything, it was dominant over the gameplay. Because, yeah, I enjoyed playing Dancing All Night, but compared to some other rhythm games, I didn't think the system was that great. I did think that the narrative and the characters and that was just brilliant. So, yeah, really looking forward to that. And did I miss it? Or I think I might have seen something about a Persona... Oh, was that announced?
Persona Q2.
Yeah.
Is that
did I see that announced, or is that... Just
that's announced, yeah. Sure. It's announced. Persona 5 cast will be in it.
Yeah, that's right.
Is it just
coming to 3DS?
Cast,
it's going to be for 3DS.
Yeah, I believe it's the Persona 5 cast is joining the 3 and 4 cast, but I could be wrong on that.
Oh, okay. Because that'd be all right. I mean, I wouldn't mind if they dumped the Persona 3 cast, because Persona 3 cast is pretty boring. And I'm going to get more hate mail for that, so... Yeah, this is a hate mail podcast, but
it is a great for yourself.
putting the Persona 4 and 5 cast together is just brilliant. Especially Persona Q was one of the real highlights I felt for the 3DS I guess in general in the last couple of years. I think it's a hidden gem, and
I found the website for Persona Q2. It's just a teaser right now. And it just says, take your heart, in a really cute font. Just all we know is that Persona 5 is going to play a role in that somehow.
Yeah, gotcha. No, but just to go back to it, I think if you haven't played Persona Q, please, please, please play it, because I haven't laughed so genuinely with the game in quite some time. It is it is hilarious. Like, it is genuinely funny, charming, honest, good-natured game, and I really recommend that one as one of the hidden gems on the 3DS and the genre in general. Did you play it, either of you? Did either of you give it a
go? Yeah, I played it, yeah. Good stuff.
I haven't played it, but I will have to do so on both of your recommendation.
Yes.
Yeah. It. It's just so
the
funny.
End, it is the, so funny. The end squad says you have to play it.
All right, let's ask the real tough question here. Who's your percent of four? Waifus.
Rise.
I think you know mine. Rise.
Yeah, you're Rise. Yeah. I see it. I'm not surprised that the Rise bunch went to Anne. But
well, they are pretty much.
Anne is like a reskin of Rise.
I used to be a Rise guy, but then I had a maturing, and now I'm all about Chie now.
Really?
Oh no, you're one of those.
I saw the light. Yeah.
Oh, I don't know, man. I mean, oh, deep breaths, Jenny. Oh. Oh.
Yeah, cheers, the one. Like, every time I start to play Persona 4, and I think I've played it through, this is playthrough earlier, I haven't had the time to really work on it, but yeah, I would have played it 5 or 6 times, actually, over the years. Sit down and say, okay, I really, like, I've seen most of the narrative, I've seen most of the character arcs. The one I haven't seen is Chie's relationship arc. I'm going to do it this time. Every single time I'm like, nah, reset.
You just, oh man, just keep gravitating to Rise.
And Yukiko. Because I end up being a bit of a player, I guess, and end up dating both of them, and that's not really very good. But.
Does it marry your real life, Matt? I mean, because I assume, I'm sure you're loyal to your wife, but you also have that thing going on with Miku.
Yeah, that's right.
I only get away with it because these are not real people. If they were real people, I'd be in a bit of trouble.
Yeah, I imagine, yeah.
No, but my wife supports my various figure addictions, collections.
Somebody has to.
Things.
Yeah. Someone's got to be understanding here.
Thank you. Welcome back, everybody. Okay, so for the last section of our podcast this week, we thought we'd look at mobile games and JRPGs because it's an interesting one. The Japanese gaming industry is obviously very into the mobile space. There's a lot of money that's been made there. And if you look at the statistics, the Japanese players are actually much more willing to spend money on mobile games than their Western counterparts. So the developers and the publishers in Japan are much more keen on this, and the mobile platform is much more more seriously, I think, by publishers of every size and shape in Japan compared to some of the other places in the world. So as a result, we've seen a lot of very expensive JRPGs actually released on mobile. And there's quite a few Final Fantasies that are mobile orientated. There's Chain Chronicles Sega does a lot of JRPGs on mobile. There's Granblue Fantasy, which...
That's right, yeah.
Been released in some places in English. It's not actually available in Australia, but it must be available in some places in English because there was a huge controversy about how censored it was because one little bit of material was covered up for the English version.
Yeah, I saw a bunch of people like screaming in English to this Japanese account, and yeah. It's like they can't read you, dude.
Put this one tiny triangle back. God, censorship.
Yeah, it was. It was literally one tiny little bit of material to hide hide some underboob.
Somebody yelled at me about that. I think I like trolled somebody because they were like, censorship is always bad. And I put, censorship is actually good though. And then people were not amused by my joke.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Huge game in Japan. I remember Tokyo Game Show 2 years ago. It was actually the most expensive booth dedicated to this one mobile game. It was a huge booth. Would have cost them a lot of money. Then, of course, the other one that I really have to mention because I still spend a lot of money on it myself, too much money, because Fire Emblem Heroes,
which That's
is
right.
great, and they keep releasing swimsuit editions and limited time editions, and if I want to get the characters in the swimsuits and stuff, I have to spend a lot of money for these bloody gachas. Never have. I still have not got a swimsuit. I must have spent like $60.
Oh my God.
Character drops and I keep getting 3 stars. And
Matt, I love your life so much. Like,
yeah.
It's just horrible.
Amazing person.
It's just horrible. I did get the wedding dresses at least when they had those earlier in the year.
Oh, lucky. So lucky.
Yeah, which was good. But yeah, anyway. JRPGs on mobile?
Yes, JRPGs on mobile. Tales of the Rays has just recently come out. Obviously, it is part of the Tales of series, Tales of Zestiria, Tales of Symphonia. And I've played a little bit of it, actually, and it kind of feels like you're actually drawing characters in from the other games, which is really interesting and fun. And it's kind of like the whole like Fire Emblem Heroes premise where it's like, I'm fighting in a new world and it's about to be destroyed. I need everyone's help. So I think the thing about Tales of the Ray is that I actually quite liked because, I mean, I've obviously been burned in the past by mobile games in general. Like Matt, I have like a gacha addiction. So I'm always very, very like reluctant to start a new game that is free to play initially because obviously you're going to find like a really cute character that you like or find costumes. You know, they actually have cat ear costumes in Tales of the Rays. And so I'm going to want to spend money on something. And so I just always am really wary about getting too into a game that I don't know much about. But Tales of the Rays, I think, is a good game. And I mean, it did so well in Japan that they were like, we're going to release it to, you know, the rest of the world. We'll let them try it out. And I think it's good because it actually just is like playing a Tales game on mobile. Like, I think the best Japanese games, or I guess the best RPGs that are released on mobile, I think, are the ones that mirror the experience on console the most, if that makes sense. Like, obviously, there are going to be some limitations combat-wise because, you know, you need to swipe up and down on a touchscreen and stuff like that. But I think things like Tales of the Rays and Eglia, because they are so similar to actual JRPGs, full-fledged JRPGs, that's why people like them so much. And I mean, yeah, that's what I want.
I mean, I guess the one thing that I find has been difficult with the mobile space when it comes to RPGs is the storytelling. I think to break a game up like a mobile game has to be broken up into small, you know, kind of minute-long bits of gameplay, build the monetization model into it, and then still tell a really good story as well. And I think a lot of developers have kind of struggled with that. And, you know, that applies even to the ones I like to play. Like, I would never suggest that Fire Emblem Heroes has a narrative of the quality of the actual Fire Emblem series on console.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, so I think that's something. The JRPGs that are on mobile rely much more heavily on people enjoying the mechanics of the RPG as opposed to the storytelling.
I'm also very interested in seeing how, like, Eglia does, just because it is launching at that premium price where, well, I say premium, but it's $10, so it's still, like, a fucking bargain. But, like, you know, it's coming at, like, for mobile, I guess it's a high, because people drove crazy by Super Mario Run's price. But, you know, it's coming at that $10 price point. Are people going, you know, will they just dismiss it offhand? Because the game looks great. It's by a bunch of, you know, ex-Brownie Brown folk, you know, translated by 8-4, who always does fantastic work. It looks absolutely charming. So I really hope that it does show that there is a market for, like, those more, like, highly priced games, more full-fledged things that aren't riddled with microtransactions and you can just go in. But we'll see. Those games are hard to break apart in that format to, you know, I guess you can, like, separate it into chapters. Like, it's free to play at start. Do you want to, like, I think Ghost Trick did that where you had to pay, like, money as you went along in the story. But it is a strange thing that developers have to deal with on mobile.
Yeah, I didn't even realize that what Eglia was, believe it or not. So I'm just looking at it now on the phone, and it looks great.
Yeah, it's really cool. I just saw it the other day. One of my friends was tweeting about it. It looks awesome.
But yeah, there has been a couple of attempts to do premium kind of JRPG style games on mobile. One was, what was it called? Zodiac or something or other.
Oh, yeah.
Which I played quite a lot about. Yeah. Like, I saw it at TGS a couple of years in the lead up to its release. It kind of looks like Child of Light in terms of the art style, and was mobile release. And yeah, it was a really good game. I don't think it sold particularly well, unfortunately, because there does seem to be that resistance from people when it comes to mobile. They refuse to pay more than, you know,
$2
for
$2 is still expensive. I think a lot of people won't even put in the $1. Like, there's a lot of people, if it's not free to play on mobile, like, I don't know, there's just a weird hurdle where they'll gladly buy anything on the PSN store for $5, but, like, there's a mental block where they just don't think there's any worth to a mobile game, which is crazy, because, you know, because of the genre, especially with, like, turn-based games, you can have a fully featured RPG on there, and, like, it's not gonna be lacking, like, maybe an action game or something else. That's trying to emulate a console-like experience, because obviously, you know, you can craft something unique around mobile around that, which they can't really emulate that. But with RPGs, a lot of the times, you know, you can take over what works there and put it on mobile and still tell that great story, have that same fulfilling combat. So, you know, I feel like it's really well set for that, and I'm definitely going to be looking into playing more mobile RPGs as I go on and with my mobile journey.
Your mobile journey.
I just had, like, a 7-hour flight, and I would have died to have been playing, like, a nice RPG during it. So I really regretted not, like, buying something then.
Well.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other problem, I guess, with mobile RPGs, is that a lot of them now are requiring you to be online while you play, which is on a flight or something. So I guess, thank goodness for Nintendo Switch, and hopefully this flood of JRPGs that'll come out on that.
Isn't that mobile. Funny that like Switch is better suited for flying than, like, Fire Emblem Heroes and you know, like, all that Nintendo's other mobile game. It's really weird. You'd think their console games wouldn't be better suited than their mobile ones, but, you know, that's just how it works.
Yeah, absolutely. I think But the great thing I think about the Switch is because it is proving to be so popular in Japan, the Japanese developers and publishers will start looking at it where they might not have with the Wii U, or they might have soured a bit on Nintendo in general over the last couple of years. Because, they tend to sell so well on the 3DS even. So there aren't that many Japanese publishers that have been supported Nintendo for a while. So with the Switch, things seem to be changing around, and I'm looking forward to Combo Heart putting all its JRPGs on Switch. I'm not sure you'd actually want to play Hyperdimension Neptunia when other people can see you playing it.
I don't think I want to kind of bust it out on the train and then have a mum like gasp in horror behind me or something.
You must be excited for that VR game, Matt.
Oh.
Which one's that?
The Hyperdimension Neptunia.
Oh, the Hyperdimensions.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's going to be. I assume it's going to be like Summer Lesson. I assume it's going to be more a dating game thingy than a an actual RPG. Because,
they just released VR of that earlier this week. You'll have to check it out, where you can be in the same room with the girls. Yeah.
Yeah, please do link me over to it. I'll have a look. I haven't seen it yet. and I'm very keen to see it. I think VR has its own troubles when it comes to doing RPGs, JRPGs. That technology also has a while to go before we'll start to see really good stuff come. Until then, I see companies like Compile Heart probably experimenting with it by doing side story kind of things with VR. But it's going to be an interesting time ahead for the genre, and I'm looking forward to it.